Now we'll continue our discussion on this new study on today's roundtable, as well as take on the resignation of Congressman Mark Foley. Joining us today from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture. In our New York bureau, Robert George, editorial writer for the New York Post, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at New York University. Welcome, everybody. And Robert, let me start with you. You've got the Tuskegee experiment, a syphilis study that took on huge significance for African Americans. What do the researchers in this case seem to have learned from that?
I think the main thing that they've learned from it is full upfront disclosure. Obviously, they're working with the families to let them know exactly what is happening. Since they can't administer this on the patients because of the injuries themselves, and that's the main focus. I mean, obviously the people in Tuskegee were really human guinea pigs, lied to, kept in the dark about what was happening to them, and just allowed to suffer for years. And I think that's really the importance. And I think if this actually really works, I think it's a great step forward.
Yvonne, you know how our folks can be. I've heard rumors that Kentucky Fried Chicken and Snapple can cause impotence and all sorts of, we can be a little conspiracy theorist about things, but there is this long history in the medical profession. How do you think communities need to balance, attention to health and attention to the medical system with a little bit of healthy skepticism?
Well, I think that the only thing that concerned me was I'm really not clear who the stakeholders in this community sense were. We heard about clergy, we heard about various other people, but who determined who were the spokespeople in Atlanta or in this particular neighborhood or community that had the wherewithal and the authority to speak on behalf of anybody? And that's where I get a little shaky. I think certainly conversing with family members, making sure that they have a clear understanding of what the trial is, what the medicine is, and some people will indeed get placebos, other people will actually get the medicine itself. I think that's all fine and well, and that was appropriate. But I think that we need to be, if I'm skeptical about anything, I'm skeptical about who we choose or who chooses who the spokespeople are. And in response to your question, I think is really interesting from the standpoint that who gets the information decides where it's disseminated to and how it's disseminated. So I think those are all big questions. I think they certainly made a great step forward to, as Robert said, have full disclosure of what was going on. But I would like a little bit more, to find out, who the community was. Yeah, who this so-called community was, because in effect, they're stepping in and signing on to something, and I don't know whether or not they are the true spokespeople for this particular constituent.
Marcelo, I mean, when you talk about true spokespeople for a community, it's sort of like when people say black leaders or Latino leaders. There's no elected position, black leader or Latino leader. How do you make a good determination, whether it's in this study or in general, about who a community's, if not leaders are, at least, touchstones are?
In a way, it really should start with the family, those closest to the person who, in this case, is unable to go through the informed consent process that in some way is one of the important legacies of the earlier abuses, like the Tuskegee experiment. So in cases such as this, where the subject herself or himself is not able to make a conscious, rational, autonomous decision. In every one of these medical procedures, then, not in the science, but let's say in the emergency room context, it's really next of kin. It's really the immediate family that has the best interest.
Well, they did go to them, but they seem to want more.
In a way, they wanted more because I think that they've learned the lessons. I mean, the two cornerstones of scientific research today are informed consent and this idea of the double-blind experimental design where nobody really knows who's getting the real treatment and who's getting a placebo treatment to ensure that there isn't a kind of a built-in bias into the study and they can really rule out which drugs have which effect. And I think they really tried in a way to involve as many stakeholders as possible in the Black community, in the Latino community, to make sure that there was total, complete transparency, and that I think that the interesting decision this, the leaders of the study made is that if anybody objected, they simply weren't going to carry the study, I guess, in the city of Atlanta. I suspect that we're going to move it on to another city. But I think this is the way science ought to proceed. It seems to me that this is a sound experimental design, and I think they've done their homework.
Well, speaking of homework, or more in, along the lines of investigation, GOP Congressman Mark Foley resigned after it was learned that he sent lurid emails to teenage boys. An FBI spokesman said the agency is now examining the exchanges to see if they violated federal law. House Speaker Dennis Hastert asked for the investigation, of course, a Republican. The White House and Democrats also called for a probe. One Republican says he told Hastert months ago about this in December of last year. Robert, we're coming up on a midterm election. Could there be worse timing for the Republican Party on this?
I can't think of it. no, I mean, this really is the perfect storm. And if, you know, if the as a Democrat-leaning friend of mine said over the weekend, if the Democrats can't win the House in this kind of a circumstance, they should just, you know, decertify as a party. This is one of those things where, you know, a lot of the scandals that were swirling around the the Republican Party this year, the whole culture of corruption involving Jack Abramoff and so forth, it becomes a lot of noise to the average person, and they try and figure out how does that really affect me. It has to do with some money and influence and all this other kind of stuff. It becomes a little bit confusing, and you can always say that everybody does it kind of thing. This is one of those. This is a scandal that's very, very easy to understand. You have a 50-something year old man who starts out with some emails that could be considered inappropriate or on the line at least, and then it graduates to instant messages with a 15 or 16 year old page. And the page apparently, you know, said that these things freaked him out. I mean, this is very, very easy, especially when you have a party that is running on the idea of security. In fact, if you go to Speaker Hastert's own website, they have one of the things that they're most proud of is passing the Adam Walsh Child Protection Act. And there's a statement from Hastert saying, it is as important to protect our children as it is to protect the border from terrorists. And now it turns out that some members of the House knew about some of these contacts for between 7 and 11 months. I mean, it's a really serious one.
Yvonne, you're a mother. I mean, obviously not of a child who's a teenager yet. But right now there is some people, some parents I know say too much emphasis on MySpace and risks to teens and, you know, just fear-based approach to looking at how children are vulnerable these days. Other people I know say you can't be too careful, that all of this really is something you have to look at. As a parent, again, admittedly, of someone who's younger, what's your take as a mom on this?
Well, I think that first, in terms of, I find it really creepy that Foley was the chair of the Caucus on Missing and Exploited Children.
Hello.
I think that certainly members of the House knew that he had these proclivities, if not, you know, real proof that, you know, he was doing something inappropriate. And there have also been reports that the pages themselves were warned by somebody or talked amongst themselves that, you know, watch out for Foley. So this was known information. And it didn't seem like the GOP was really quick to get this guy out or bring him in line. As a parent, I think that, you know, you have to just try and be vigilant on as many fronts as possible. The internet is not going away. And I think that that being said, you have to kind of do your best to monitor your children's activities and be clear with them that the boogeyman looks like probably, you know, the ice cream guy or the neighbor next door, that it's not some ominous creature that's going to come out and snatch you in the middle of the night. You know, a lot of times it's people who we, the public, hold up in terms of respect. So I think it's a difficult job. I don't like the fear-mongering that seems to surround parenting. This is just 21st century reality, and I think we have to be smart as parents and as a society to be quick and thorough in getting people out of the way that could possibly do harm. And I think we send a very mixed and dangerous message when we allow these people to be in our midst, and then when they're caught, oh yeah, we need to get rid of them. I think that's not the way to handle this.
Marcelo, I'm going to switch you to another topic, but it seems to me that there is a relationship. The Philadelphia School District got more than 100 complaints because the district recognized Gay and Lesbian History Month. One parent said she would keep her child out of school for the entire month of October. Now, on the one hand, you have this scandal involving, a grown man who, from what I know, Foley has not declared himself gay in any way. But then you have, when it comes to gay and lesbian issues, sort of outright fear and terror on the part of some people. What does that say about our culture?
Well, I think it's really the hypocrisy and the double binds that I think come to the fore. On the one hand, you have a kind of a paradigm of the fox guarding the chickens here, in the case of the congressman, and all of the just very disturbing symbolic and practical issues implicated in that story. And then we have a case in Philadelphia where the idea of inclusion, the idea of trying to inculcate tolerance, the idea of trying to support students that may otherwise be vulnerable. The research seems to suggest that children that attend these schools where there is more of an airing of the issues facing gay and lesbian students tend to be less likely to be assaulted by their peers or the victims of discrimination, but we can't have a rational conversation. So again, I think we go back to the issue Yvonne brought up earlier. We need more transparency. We need to communicate with our children, and we need to understand the dangers of intolerance, and we need to understand the dangers of these predatory individuals that are part of what we're seeing today.
Robert, we got one second.
Yeah. Basically, you know, I think you have here a mixture of a little bit of too much PC, I think, in some of these kind of these like gay and lesbian awareness things, then matched with a conservative complete and total overreaction in terms of pulling kids out of school. So, I mean, you've got these competing political agendas where I don't think that the kids are served either way.
All right. Robert George in our New York Bureau, editorial writer for The New York Post. In D.C., Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, who we should mention just won a huge honor, the Order of the Mexican Aztec Eagle last
week. Congratulations.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.